Hey everyone, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I had the privilege and the honor of tracking down Bruce Holstead, who is a very busy man. He runs a couple tower crews. He's got runs a company, obviously, and has about four full-time tower crews, as well as a bunch of subs he works with. But the reason I had him on the show is because I called him on one of the Yahoo groups forums for tower climbers, and he had Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and from a tick bite, RMSF from a tick bite. And for him, it was more than being sick. He waited 6 months before he saw the doctor. He had a lot of problems. He didn't think anything of it. Finally, 6 months later, went into the doctor, and they talked a little bit, and he said local physician. But after Bruce talked to him a little bit, doctor said, you'll hear it on the interview. Doctor asked him about tick bites, and luckily he had a very observant doctor. Now, with that said, I want you to pay attention. He didn't have insurance, and the tests for the tick bites were $700. I mean, they're not cheap, but I mean, at least he was diagnosed quickly after seeing the doctor, and he was able to get it treated. But you'll have to hear his story. It caused him a lot of problems. 3 years of his life have been really rough. And out of that, I don't know how long, but I mean, he had a lot of problems. It hurt him financially, hurt his work. He couldn't climb. At least he had the sense enough to stay off the tower when he was sick. And he just went through a lot, and he feels he has two more years of recovery left. So it will be a total of 5 years. Just want you to think about that, guys. The other thing I want you to pay attention to, you mentioned some great points, like prevention is the best thing you can do. And there is something, an insecticide called permethrin. And I have the links in my blog. Just go to the blog, and you can buy it at Walmart. And you can buy it at other stores, Amazon. You can order it off Amazon. So look for that. Now, you put it in your clothes, not your skin. I don't know. I read somewhere that you can put it in your skin, but it's an insecticide, and it kills the ticks. That's the deal. So this is the stuff they use to spray to kill ticks. So I think if you put it in your clothes, you'll be fine. I know a lot of you guys in the summer don't like to climb with jeans on. I always wore pants. That was me. I very rarely climbed in shorts, unless I got called out on a Saturday or a Sunday, and I was already wearing shorts. But anyway, the point is, protect yourself. Prevention is better than a cure any day of the week. So if you can prevent tick bites, it's the best thing you can do. Permethrin. And the other thing, he talks about his business, his life. You know, he still runs quite a few crews, still pretty busy, and business is good for this guy. He's a smart businessman. He knows what he's doing. But the disease affected him in so many ways, and luckily, you know, had a good wife. She helped him out and really helped him get through some tough times. So I know I'm dragging it on. I just want to give you a decent intro. So with all that said, this is Bruce Holstead, and he wrote a couple books too. You might want to check it out. And the other thing is, for Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, there is a support group on Facebook. It's basically, I think it's the Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever support group. And I have the link on my blog, so just go there. But there is a support group. There is hope for you guys on Facebook. So just, you're not alone if you already have it. If you got bit by a tick and you have some strange symptoms, even if you don't know you got bit by a tick, if you're out in the woods all the time, you know, it might be a good idea to pay attention to that. So, all right. And without any delays as I stammer through that statement, I'll continue on to the interview with Bruce. Thanks, guys. And remember, be smart, be safe, and pay attention.
That's good. Yeah, I wrote up a blog on what you had put out in your forum, on the Yahoo forum, about Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And boy, I mean, everyone... It grabbed everyone's interest, you know. It just seemed like it was the thing to talk about at the time. And then I got a lot of other people that really had the same thing. And it seems like it all depends where you're located as to whether the doctors will are able to you know, figure out what it is. But it seems like with you, you lived with that for years. It seemed horrible. I mean, do you know when you first got it? Did you?
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, exactly. I know exactly. Well, when I got it, when I was diagnosed, I got bitten in August of 2010 on a tower job. We were taking down a tower, and I was deep in the woods. It was an abandoned site. And I'm accustomed to tick bites, have been for years. If you're in the trade and you're out in the woods a lot, you're going to get some.
Yeah.
But
what part of the country were you in?
I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas, and the job was here local to me.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I began to get sick, and I was not aware at that time that the result of my illness, or my illness was a result of this tick bite, but my health began to decline. My initial symptoms were muscle cramps. I had muscle cramps on a continuing basis, and then set about upon me was the most horrible case of mental confusion that I've ever known. I was becoming delirious, and I was kind of starting to lose touch with reality. Talked to myself a lot. I had all these mental health issues. I thought it was early onset Alzheimer's, to be honest with you.
Oh, wow.
And it was horrible. And I had not been to the doctor during this period of time because the symptoms were kind of subtle and they were kind of slow in coming on. But eventually the symptoms got where I couldn't ignore them, so I went to see my MD, and fortuitously, I see an MD in town that has been my MD for 30 years, and he's about my age. He's an independent. He's not beholden to any particular group, and he's pretty much of a free thinker. And I sat with him and described my symptoms, and he looked at me, and he said, "When was your last tick bite?" And I said, "Well, I get bitten by ticks all the time." And he ran the screening for RMSF, and of course it came back off the charts. And so anyway, that was 3 years ago that I got my diagnosis, and it's just been a continuing battle to get back to health. I mean, I've just completed my third year of that battle. He says I've got a couple of more years.
Well, hey, before we get too far, so from the time you got the tick bite till you started getting the muscle cramps and then the confusion, how long was that?
From the time I got the tick bite, the muscle cramp started within 30 days, and the mental confusion appeared about 5 months later, and that's what drove me to the doctor.
Wow. Oh, man.
I never had fever. I never had, the classic symptoms are the sudden onset of fever, the red rash that develops around the wrists and around the knees. There are a plethora of symptoms that are mentioned, but what they don't tell you is all or none of those symptoms can be present with this particular bacteria. So I didn't have the classic symptoms, but later on I did, of course, so I sought treatment.
Well, it's amazing. Your doctor knew what it was right away, didn't he?
Yeah, and that is a huge component of the battle, is the medical community being dismissive of the symptoms and attributing them to other things. My experience has been that you have to be very firm and proactive and ask for the test specifically, which is expensive. I didn't have insurance at the time, so it was about $700.
Cool.
But you have to specifically ask for the test. Yeah. And indeed, fortuitously, my MD was very literate about these kinds of things, and he stays up on this kind of information. So that is indeed a large part of the battle for those of us that are affected with it. It's just getting your MD to listen to you.
Yeah. See, I think from what I hear, that's a big part of the problem, is that doctors just don't know. Now, the good news is, on the East Coast, I think it's becoming common enough that doctors are beginning to realize what it is. Now, I talked to a guy here not too long ago from the West Coast, and he's from the East Coast, but he came back east, got bit by a tick, didn't think anything of it. He went back to California, and nobody knew what was wrong with him, because on the West Coast, that's not a common thing. I don't know if they have ticks out there or not. I just don't know. But for him to go to a doctor out there, they didn't know what it was for months, I think over a year. And then finally someone figured it out and they were able to treat him. But didn't mean to get off the subject there, but it's your doctor. It's amazing. He knew what it was right away. But Well, you still had to fight it. You still have an issue, so they can't just treat you and clean it out. That can't happen.
The common thought among the medical community is that doxycycline is 100% effective against this bacteria 100% of the time. And my experience has been that simply is not the case. It did help me immeasurably on the front end, but disease kept recurring, which it can do, and it kept manifesting itself in various fashions. I would have these horrible infections that would course throughout my body. Sometimes they would lodge in my teeth, sometimes in my prostate. I'd have wisdom teeth that would flare up, and the dentist would want to pull my wisdom teeth out, and I'd say, no, the wisdom teeth are not the problem. The infection is the problem. I had arthritis develop for about a year. I had a horrible case of arthritis onset, and then it went away. So anyway, there, as I say, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Now, you mentioned East Coast. The bastion of Lyme and RMSF research is occurring out there. I believe it's at the University of Rhode Island. There is a medical community out there that is very committed to studying tick-borne diseases, and they are disseminating a lot of good information.
Well, that's good to hear. So did you do a lot of research on your own? Is that how you found this out? Did your doctor help you out?
My doctor, once he got the diagnosis, he left it up to me to do my own research. And I would do that, and I would come back to him, and I would say, Jay, you know, we tried this doxycycline. I've now got this problem. And he was very supportive. He'd say, okay, it's been 6 months. We're going to pick a different antibiotic and try that. And I've been on 5 different antibiotic regimens, and each time I've gotten a little better. Each time there was an improvement. So whatever he is recommending, and then they're all just really common antibiotics. Most of them are old school things from the 60s and 70s that are pretty stout by today's standards, and they're pretty cheap. I mean, they're just, you know, standard antibiotics. But each time I go through a round of antibiotics, something about the disease dissipates or goes away completely. So there's some symptom that leaves me every time I do a round of antibiotics. So my encouragement to people that suffer from the disease would be to stay after your MD. And there's a lot of paranoia about antibiotic overuse today. But in this disease, that is the exception. There is a need to stay on antibiotics until the infection is completely dealt with.
Wow. So over 3 years, I mean, I just can't believe it.
Oh, it's horrible. It is horrible. It just about cost me my business. Just about cost me everything I owned. It was completely where I was making horrible financial decisions. I was making bad employee decisions. Thankfully, I quit climbing when I got sick, or heaven knows what would have happened. I stayed on the ground, but even on the ground, I was dangerous. So it's just a horrible disease. 3 years is a long time, but it looks like it's going to be about a 5-year battle for me, and that's okay, because there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, man. God bless you, Bruce. honest to God, I just can't believe what you went through and what you're still going through.
A lot of people in my industry are going to suffer from this disease because the bacteria seems to be becoming ever more prevalent, especially in my part of the country. And important thing is to be educated about it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, at least get the word out, you know, at least some people listen. I'm hoping these younger guys listen. That's what I'm hoping, because you know how it is now, climbing. There's so many young people getting into it. And my last blog or in podcast was with Kevin Kidd. He was nice enough to come on. Now, he admitted he had nowhere near the problems you had, but he said about it reoccurring one or two, I think he said once. And he said it came back, you know, he said about the time you think it's gone, it comes back.
Yeah.
And, but he's a lot better off than you. Boy, your case is extreme, and you can tell me if this is true. Kevin seemed to think the way it attacks you, the bacteria, it doesn't necessarily attack the same part of the body internally at the same time. He said it could attack anywhere. He said you don't necessarily have the same symptoms over and over again. Did you notice
that was exactly my experience. I mean, from muscle cramps to wisdom tooth infections to prostate infections to mental confusion, every time it recurs, it attacks something different. Presently, it's attacking the lymph nodes of my neck. So, but in response to Kevin and in response to your great efforts to get this, get information disseminated on this, the important thing is to get on it quick. See, the disease had 6 months to set up within me. I mean, it got a good firm toehold before I ever started treating it. People who recognize the symptoms and get on the disease quickly have a much better chance of recovering with fewer occurrences.
So, what kind of ticks? Do you know, is it deer ticks?
The deer tick was what got me.
Okay. So, I did a little bit of research on this. I didn't go through what you did, thank God. I just, you know, I looked up some different things, and I know this sounds a bit crazy, but a lot of guys, like I got bit by a lot of ticks, and most guys pull the tick out and they throw it away. They throw it down or whatever. If the head's in there, they dig the head out. That's what most people do. Now, I read on this one medical thing, and I don't know how you feel about this, but it sounds like a good idea. They say if you get bit by a tick, save it. They said, now they used a pill bottle, but I think you could take a Ziploc with you to a tower site. So you're out of the site. If you get bit by, if you have a tick on you and he's in you, you pull it out and you could put it in a Ziploc. Now that's assuming he's still there. Now in Kevin's case, he said you can get bit, sometimes a tick will bite and then back out for no reason. So you may not even know you got bit. So, but if you have a tick in you, maybe it would be a good idea. Carry a Ziploc with you and just throw them in a Ziploc bag and take them home and freeze them. That way, if you start to get sick or have symptoms, you have something to take with you. Now, I don't know if the doctors will even look at it, but, you know, what do you think of that idea?
I'll tell you a better idea. That is a good idea, but I'll tell you a better idea. The better idea is to get a product on your clothing that will kill the ticks on contact. Then you'll never have to contend with them. And that product, what a lot of people don't understand, standard insect repellents that contain DEET are not very effective against ticks. The most effective product is called permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, I believe is the way it's spelled. It's available on Amazon. The permethrin product is not a product that's put on the skin, but instead you treat the clothing. And that is 100% fatal to ticks. So I treat my clothing. You know, before I go out in the woods, it's treated with, you know, it will last through multiple washings, but then I also keep a spray bottle of it, and I hit my boots and my socks and my pants legs with permethrin, and I have not had a tick on my body in 3 years, and I work in the woods at least 3 days a week.
So that is P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, is that right?
No, permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N. R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, I believe is the spelling, permethrin. And it's available in agri stores in bulk quantities under various trade names, but the permethrin spray bottle is available from Amazon. It's about $22 for a 12-ounce or 14-ounce bottle. It is highly effective against ticks. I mean, you can spray your boots and watch a tick crawl up on there, and he's incapacitated within minutes. So that is the most effective way I know to prevent yourself from getting the disease.
It's a great idea. Yeah, I guess the best cure is prevention. That's what I was trying to say. And that's a good idea. So I'll make sure when I write the blog, I'll put that on there, and everyone listening can get that. So as far as your work life, I mean, you had a business. And how did you deal with it day to day? I mean, were you just confused all the time? Were you bedridden, or were you trying your hardest to get the work done, or what'd you do?
Made a lot of bad decisions. I was exhausted all the time. I could get in about 4 hours before I just had to go lay down. So I'd write quotes and bids that were just completely out of proportion to the workload. I'd way underbid work. Sometimes I'd way overbid it. just had a hard time with my cognitive abilities. Thankfully, my wife's very understanding. She rode through this disease with me. My memory would go. I would forget appointments. I mean, I would forget very important appointments. I would set appointments. I would write them in my day timer, and then I'd forget to look at my day timer. I had various social and civic leadership positions that I gave up because I couldn't remember people's names. I couldn't remember what I was supposed to do. I had difficulty in driving. I'd be driving somewhere, and I'd forget where I was going. I mean, it was like early onset Alzheimer's. The only thing that I could do effectively was my hospice volunteering work, which I have done on a continuing basis for years. I could still do that for some reason, but nothing else could I do with any degree of proficiency.
Well, that's rough for us. I just can't believe you survived it. Your wife, God bless her, she put, I'm going to say it bad, but she put up with you, you know, and she took care of you, I guess, right?
Yeah, she would kind of become my memory for me. I got to where I just carried 8.5 by 11 pad around all day and write, just continually write on it. And then she would sit down and look over the pad at night and say, now, is this important? And do we need to do something here? So I was fortunate in that I had a good support network in my wife. For the most critical, that period of time was about 3 months when it was really the most critical mentally. So,
got a good woman there.
Yeah, she was very good to take care of me when I couldn't think for myself very well. So
let me ask you something. You got two books that I know of, Sacred Spaces, and then you have the Steps to a Conservative Mind. When did you write that? Was that before all this, or did you write it when you through all this? When did you write those books?
I wrote those way before. I wrote Steps to a Conservation of Mind in 2007, and then Sacred Spaces came out about a year later. And those are not the products of any literary genius. They were just my firm belief is, you know, when you're a hospice volunteer and you're with people that are dying, you hear a lot of stories and you hear them for the last time.
Yeah.
And so it's become my belief that everybody's got a story. And everybody should write it down. I try to get everyone I know to sit down and write a book about their experience because it will be invaluable to your descendants 4 or 5 generations from now. Just imagine what it would be like for you and I if we had the stories of our ancestors in their own words in book form on the shelf. Well, they would be the most priceless books we owned.
Yeah, good point. Good
point. So I try to get everyone to do that, especially guys in this industry, because our experiences are so rich and so varied, and they have such, you know, we have such great stories to tell.
Yeah. I got to tell you, well, for one, God bless you for being a hospice volunteer, because my dad had hospice right before he died. They came in and set everything up, and my brother stayed with him the whole time. The hospice volunteers didn't, because we had family that could actually stay with him. We took turns. I know it sounds a little crazy, but if you're ever in that situation, you probably understand. Because my brother,
oh, absolutely.
Because when you take shifts, basically, I mean, you just get exhausted doing it. Anyways, my brother was there when he died. He was the last one there with him. But I thank you for your service for that. But you're right. I think so many people don't write down their stories. I'm going to tell you, I just interviewed an author, Vicky Kosiorg. She's the one that wrote a book. She just wrote a book I like called The Tower Builder. And I thought it was a really good book. It's out on Amazon. But the reason she's so interesting is because she was writing about the Blow Knox towers down in Charlotte. They're a set of AM towers. There's 3 of them.
Yeah.
So anyways, she did all kinds of research. And a research letter to a lot of World War II fighter pilots and aviators and RF guys from World War II. And you just said about stories that people forgot. But when she interviewed these guys, they were so happy to tell them their stories. And so many of them said that people just don't care anymore. That's their attitude. That they have all this history. There are things that I think even as Americans, we forget like what we went through in World War II. That wasn't that long ago. You know, that was in the 40s. I know it was 70 or 80 years ago, but that's barely a generation. You know, a lot of some of those guys, I shouldn't say a lot, are still alive, and they want to share what they know. Because when she went in to talk to them, she said most of them just say nobody cares anymore. And I think that goes along with what you're saying. There are so many people that have so many stories, especially, like you said, in our industry, the tower industry. We've probably seen a lot, let's say, crazier things than other people in many ways. And nobody knows, you know, it's just like you said, if we write down our stories and we can preserve it at least in print, even if it's handwritten, then we have it. Just like you said, to our descendants or family, that'd be the most valuable thing they could have, to look through that and understand it. So
yes.
Anyway,
nobody knows the stories, but our descendants are the ones that would be most interested in hearing those stories. And if we write them down, they will have a great treasure. So I encourage everyone that's in the trade, and even if you're not in the trade, everybody's got a story. You can self-publish today for almost peanuts. I mean, you can, on the cheapest level, you can self-publish a book for $2.80 a copy.
Yeah.
Now, there's no excuse. So everybody needs to do it.
And everyone, you know what the biggest excuse is going to be? I don't have the time. And you know they do. They just have to make the time. They have to set time aside. So,
well, my experience was, once I got started, it just kind of took on a life of its own. Then it went much faster than I had anticipated. So I think the critical thing is just get started.
Yeah.
And you'll be amazed at how quickly the stories begin to flow once you conjure up the memories and all the details begin to come to the surface. And then it becomes an act of joy, and it becomes a very pleasurable thing.
Wow. So how long did it take you to write Steps to a Conservation of Mind?
It took about 2 or 3 months. There's one thing unique about writing your own story. It's uniquely yours. It doesn't require a lot of research. So,
yeah, good point.
You know everything. So you can kick one out in a few months. Sacred Spaces is just an even shorter collection of little stories that I kicked it out in a week. But again, those were written for my descendants. But when you publish with some of these self-publishing authors, they automatically kick you up on the Amazon and put you on Kindle and get you into the major book distribution chains, which I never thought would happen. And so, I mean, it sold several thousand copies. And if it doesn't sell another one, that's fine. I just wrote it for my great-grandchildren. They will never meet me.
That's great. It's great that you can think that far ahead, you know, for your family. So,
if you're in the hospice trades, you think about those things.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I guess, I don't know how to put this in a nicer way, but I guess you're there for the end. So it makes you think about your end. Is that accurate? Or you probably
have
a better way to say it.
No, I do confront my own mortality by virtue of being with people as they're leaving the planet. I am probably present for 20 to 30 departures a year because I do last hour's work, vigil work. And
wow.
So I'm present for a large number of departures, and I'm with a lot of families as their loved ones leave. So yeah, I do confront my own mortality probably more than most people do, because I'm acutely aware of it, but certainly no more so than those who are in the trade professionally, the doctors and the nurses, social workers that I'm around. So they confront it much more than I do. I'm just a minor player.
20 to 30 a year. Is that rough on you? I mean, emotionally? I mean, is it?
No, it's not rough at all. Once you embrace the idea that it's completely natural, it's completely a part of the process. It is rough on me if the departure is full of angst or enmity or strife, or there's a lot of anger or a lot of unresolved emotional issues in the family. That can be hard on me. But if those things have all been dealt with appropriately, then it's not hard at all, because you're providing a source of comfort to people, taking away the fear.
Yeah.
So
that's true. Like I said, God bless you. I appreciate that. Just, I've been through it with my own family, so I know what you do. And then I know, you know, even after the fact, hospice comes in and does a lot. I don't know if people know the entire process, but, you know, my dad wanted to die at home, and I can just tell you about my experience. But, you know, hospice comes in, they set up the bed, they get everything ready. Then we brought my dad home from the hospital. And he was there for about 4 days, and, you know, we all spent time with him. And then he did pass. And let me tell you, my dad was, you know, I think around 95, and he was pretty scared of dying. I know people say you come to terms with it, but I could see the fear in his eyes. I think he did come to terms with it, you know, at the end, but it's not – even at that age, everyone says he has a good long life. Well, to him, it wasn't ready to be over yet. Even though
he
made the decision, I mean, it was really his decision. He wanted to die in his house. My dad built the house. You know, he and my mom lived there their entire lives. They had all four of us kids there, and that's where he wanted to die. So he came home, but hospice helped set everything up, and then they asked us if they wanted someone to stay. We didn't want that. We just wanted family there. But then after the fact, all the phone calls, I don't know if people realize, but hospice comes out, they comfort the family, they do counseling. They also, pretty sure it was hospice, comes out and takes care of all the medicine, because, you know, dad had heart pills and all this other crap, which he was off at the end, but we still had all that stuff at the house. They helped clean all that up. They helped organize everything. They help you with the paperwork. I don't think people understand everything you guys do. So, yeah. So thank you.
Well, I'm not one of those. That's all the professionals. And yeah, they do offer a great range of services, social workers, bereavement counselors. They have professionals that come in and do things as mundane as helping to locate the will. The last will and testament, you know, helping families deal with clothing items. I mean, they're a great group of professionals that are very dedicated to their trade and very sensitive and caring people. And it's a great joy to be a volunteer with them and be allowed to work with them on these things. Cause it's they're very, very gifted people.
Yeah. And just because, you know, we were grateful. I know my sister had a hard time with it because she associates hospice with death, obviously. So she couldn't deal with it. When they would come, she had to leave. I guess, you know, it's just she couldn't deal with it. She looked at it as it was over at that point, which I guess you could say it was. But, you know, we were doing everything we could to say goodbye in our own way. And yeah, I guess some people can deal with that and some people can't. So sorry, Bruce, I didn't mean to make it all about me. I mean, we're here to hear about your story.
That's fine. The death experience is common to all of us, and we will all deal with it. That's when I speak to groups about hospice care, civic groups or whatever, that's the statement I always make. There is a 100% chance that you or someone you know close to you will need our services. So, there's great certainty. So anytime we can elevate the conversation about the dying process in this country, it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I think, the more education people have, even about that, I know we keep bringing that up, but the more we can educate people about what they have to go through and to accept the help, you know, I think that's a big thing too. I think a lot of people, they think they don't need the help or don't want the help. And boy, I'll tell you what, I'm so glad we had it.
Yeah, and that help is available for months before the departure. I mean, hospice can be involved 6 months before death. So there's a lot of things that a hospice organization can do in terms of having a CNA come in and bathe the patient, help with light housekeeping, meal preparation, relieve the caregiver so they can go run errands. There's a lot we can offer to families that are in that situation if people will only learn about it and take advantage of it.
Wow. So, well, changing the subject, I guess I mostly have tower climbers listen. So how's your business? How's business going? What do you mostly work on in your business?
My business is good. We're a maintenance contractor, and then we do new installations for microwave. And yeah, our business is good. The industry is booming right now. All the carriers, of course, are rolling hard. There's a good boom in the agricultural markets and the small tower business. You know, John Deere and the other manufacturers have integrated these GPS-based systems for tractors. And each one of those requires a small tower, 50 to 100 feet on the farmer's location
really?
For the transmitting antenna. Yeah, the product, the generic name for the product is called RTK. Operates in the lower 900 megahertz band, around 901. And in the agri markets, it's a huge thing. And for a guy in the small tower end of the business, there's a good living to be made right there. Of course, microwave is just, I've been predicting for 20 years the demise of microwave radio. It was going to opt out for fiber optic. I was exactly wrong. Microwaves exploding all over the country for backhaul for carriers. Conventional telephone circuits are becoming obsolete in a lot of parts of the country because the traditional wireline common carriers don't have the revenue stream to support those T circuits that they had years ago when they had all these residential phone customers. We have T circuits in our state that are leased by phone companies or by major utilities or by medical providers, and the common carrier, the landline telephone company, says that circuit is broken and we're not going to fix it. Find some other mechanism. I guess half a dozen times in the past year, we've gone in and built small towers and put in microwave shots because the phone company refused to fix a T circuit that ran through a swamp.
Wow.
So the microwave business is hot, and it's going to stay hot for a long time, unlicensed and licensed. The broadcast flurry is, you know, over after the DTV conversion.
Yep.
There's not just a tremendous amount of broadcast work going on right now that I'm aware of. There may be in other markets, but there's just a continuing maintenance there. So anyway, the business is good. My business is good right now. We're in a good segment of the market. I try to be flexible so that if I need to be doing something different, I can do it. I'm not a turf contractor. I don't do a lot of turf work. I try to go for other more specialized parts of the business. So
it sounds like even though you're specialized, though, you still have a bit of diversity. I mean, you're doing the microwave, and then you're doing, it sounds like a little bit of broadcast. It sounds like you have your fingers in every market, which it's probably a good thing, because that way when one slows down, another one picks up.
I learned a long time ago that for a small operation like mine, ideally you need about four or five main customers, preferably in different market segments. And then, you know, you need a half a dozen or a dozen smaller customers, small Wi-Fi operators or small broadcasters, people that can fill in the gaps. The most dangerous thing you can do is have all your eggs in one basket.
Yep.
So we try to do that purposely, and it seems to have worked so far.
Yeah, knock on wood, right? Seems to be working.
Yeah. See, for 24 years, it seems to have worked, so I think I'll stick with it.
How many crews do you have?
I have four crews that are my W-2 employees. And then I've got a plethora of subs that come in as we need them, but I have 10 in-house W-2 employees.
Well, that sounds like you got a pretty good business there. Do you think it'll grow, or do you think it's going to maintain for the next let's say a couple years?
Well, now that my health is back, I think it'll grow. You know, when I was so unhealthy, it was hard to function. I got down to about four men.
How'd you get through that time when you were writing bad quotes? How'd you get through that time? I mean, was it rough?
Not not very well. I lost a pile of money over several years. I lost a bunch of money and made a lot of bad mistakes. I made some bad hiring decisions. It was just awful. Of course, I had money in savings, and I was able to weather it. It wasn't like every decision was a bad one, but all that notwithstanding, it wasn't easy.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be on your toes to run a good business. You hope that 8 out of 10 decisions are good, not 4 out of 10. When 4 out of 10 are good, yeah, you got problems.
I was in the 4 out of 10 category there for a while, but thankfully those days are behind me. At least I hope they are. And if I have an onset of that component of the disease again, I will recognize it much more quickly, and I'll adjust myself accordingly. But self-awareness is the hardest kind of awareness to have sometimes.
Yeah.
I was making bad decisions and wasn't even aware I was doing.
Well, sounds like you have a good wife, so maybe she'll tell you when you're making bad decisions.
Yeah, you know, she does. She can, now that we've been through this together, once in a while she'll kind of hesitate when she speaks and say, "Are you sure about that?" And so, yeah, she's very much aware when I start drifting. So I'm lucky to have her.
Ah, that's good. Good to hear, Bruce. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today. I don't know if you have anything else, any other stories you want to tell. I'll promote your website, BruceHolsted.com. I don't know if you want me to promote anything else, your business or anything.
Now, the only thing that I would wish people would promote is awareness of tick-borne illnesses and the awareness of the permethrin product that will surely and swiftly kill any ticks that get on a man's clothing and prevent him a lifetime of misery, as was afforded me when I got bitten. And I think it's also important to understand that fully 10% of the people that acquire a tick-borne illness die from it. And I believe those numbers are low, because I believe there are a good many deaths from infection that have their origin in tick-borne diseases, but they aren't diagnosed that way. So I think the actual percentages might be even higher. So if I were to ask you to promote anything, it would be awareness of the diseases and awareness of the prevention methods that are available to us now.
You got it. I'll look up permethrin, and I'll put a couple links on there for that. And then I'll also put a lot of links on there about education to tick-borne tick bites and tick-borne diseases and things like that. And that's what I'm, like I said, that's my purpose. I think when you're a tower guy, especially when you're a young tower guy, you know, you think the only threat is the fall, you know, and granted, that's a big one. You know, you don't want to fall, you want to wear your safety gear. But there's so many other hazards out there that I think guys just don't think about. And like you said, tick bites. You're out in the woods all the time. You're on a tower. You can't get away from being on the woods. So if we can just have these guys, like you said, I mean, if they can just go on permethrin on their clothing, problem solved. You know, there's one less hazard they have to worry about. I mean, all these hazards are real. The guys that get stung by bees that are allergic, you know, as long as they have their medications with them. But if you can avoid the sting, problem solved, you know. It's another hazard you don't have to worry about.
Absolutely, and you're a credit to the industry for raising this awareness, and you're doing great things for your fellow man. So that's an honorable thing for you, Wade. It's a very honorable thing to do.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks. Appreciate the kind words. I really do. So, well, I'll let you get back to work, and I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to me and to coming on the podcast. And I really appreciate the first time letting me post that blog about everything you've been through. And I know you don't think you're a good writer, but I do. I think you write some pretty good stuff. So,
well, I would just, in closing, let me mention one thing. For those who think they may have a tick-borne illness, first, get to a doctor and get a diagnosis. Secondly, there is a great Facebook group called Survivors of Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. And if they'll join that group, it's a collection of people who are suffering or have suffered from the disease. There's a lot of great information on that group. Okay?
You got it. I'm writing that down, so I'll put that in there as well. So hopefully we can, that's a Facebook group, so I'll put the link in there. Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks for the call, Wade.
Hey, have a great weekend.
You too, friend. Bye-bye. All
right, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. That was Bruce Holsted, www.bruceholsted.com. Bruce, B-R-U-C-E, Holsted, H-O-L-S-T-E-D.com. And he's got two books, Steps to a Conservation of Mind and Sacred Spaces. And as you can hear, he's a good man. Guy put up with a lot. His business survived. He's doing great. And I think that for everything he's been through, it's great that he wants to share his story. It's great that he has a Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever support club. Well, not him, but you know, there is a group, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever Survivors on Facebook. So if you do get this disease, you're not alone. All I'm asking, two things. Go to the doctor if you think you have it as soon as possible. Have them run the tests. They're not cheap, but I'm hoping most of you have insurance with your companies. The other thing, prevention. You heard in there, and it's on my blog, where to get the insecticide to put on your clothing. Prevention, prevention, prevention. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. They say that for a reason. If you can prevent this terrible disease by just taking the proper steps ahead of time, life is good. Okay, it's one less thing you have to worry about. A lot of hazards out there, and I want you to be safe, be smart, and pay attention. Pay attention to what you're doing at all times. On the tower site, you should pay attention to what you're doing at all times whenever you're doing anything. I know we all like to relax, and maybe that's the time you don't have to pay attention when you're lounging in front of the TV. But if you're driving, pay attention. If you're up on a tower, pay attention. If you're on the ground, another guy's on the tower, pay attention. All right? I just want you guys to be safe. I'm trying to put this information out there so you younger guys that think you're invincible will learn something from these older guys that have seen the ropes and have seen problems that you may not be aware of. And they'll be the first ones to tell you, when they were young and dumb, they thought they could survive anything. And now they're realizing that all the risks they took and all the problems they had when they were younger have become, have taken a toll on their bodies and their lives. So this is why Bruce is getting the word out there. He suffered through this horrible disease, and he's still, you know, fighting it. He has two more years to fight it. But he's back, baby. He's back. He's back working. He has good people working with him, has a good wife, as you heard. So the man's got it together. Now, with that said, he's had it together before the disease, and that helped him keep it together during the disease, and that'll help him keep it together after the disease. So, you know, he's a smart guy. We can all learn from this guy. All right, like I said, I hope all your jobs are safe. All you guys affected by the AT&T stop work, I'm sorry. I hope you all get jobs. I hope you all get work. I know you'll be mad at the company for laying you off. I heard MasTec had a massive layoff. I think it was 27% last I read. Don't get mad at them. They worked with AT&T to gear up, and they actually expected all this work working with AT&T. AT&T, and I'm just speculating here, but AT&T wants to buy DirecTV, or Dish, one of them. Anyways, they want to buy somebody. So I would imagine they're going to conserve their cash for that purchase. It's a huge purchase. That's why they're conserving their money. All you guys can do is go out and look for another job. Or, you know, hopefully MasTec can win some more business. There's a lot of work out there. It's very frustrating. And I know it's not soon enough, but I'm hoping the feds take off with the FirstNet deal. And if FirstNet starts releasing the money, we'll have a lot of government work. I think that's something we could all use. Building, and we need it for public safety. Not like they're just throwing money away. For those of you that think we don't need it, yeah, well, when you're in trouble, you'll think twice. I think this is something, I look at it as a good thing. A national public safety system, even though it's going to be state by state, it'll be a national standard. And I know I criticize FirstNet a lot, but it's not for the idea. It's not for the thought or the concept. It's just because they're slow. But you know what? It's federal government. Everything they do is slow. It's bogged down by bureaucracy. They don't have a person to make decisions. Like we're talking to Bruce. You go to his company, buck stops with him, right? You're going to say, hey, what do we do? He's going to say, we're going to do step A or step B, right? In the government, it's not like that. All these people get together. All these committees get together. And everyone has their own little kingdom that they're trying to get money for. So that's really how FirstNet came about. You know, I think it was, I can't remember the name of the law, but it had to do with, you know, the tax breaks we got, and somehow they threw in a nationwide communication system. I don't understand it. I know we need it. I'm glad it happened. It'll be good for the work whenever it happens. So I appreciate the work FirstNet is doing. I just wish they could do it a little, they could make decisions a bit faster than they're making them. I'm sorry, off on a rant. I'm back. I'll let you guys go. Be safe, be smart, pay attention to what you're doing. And please, look out for yourself, look out for your coworker, look out for your family, and look out for your friends. And I'm hoping your coworkers are your friends. So just look out for each other. You look out for them, they should look out for you. All right, guys. Take care. Bye.